I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
It's mentally yours.
Hello and welcome back to Mentally Yours, Metro.co.uk's mental health podcast. I'm Rachel, Metro's lifestyle editor, and on today's episode, I'll be chatting to author Paul Bent about fatherhood, mental health, and how men can be impacted by birth trauma too. His book, Help, I'm Going to Be a Dad, is out now. But before that, I've been hearing from you. As always, our lovely listeners have been getting in touch to share what they've been doing to support their mental health this week.
As soon as I start to feel that funk and I'm maybe feeling a little bit down or a little bit anxious, I find just getting outside, breathing in fresh air, sort of reminding myself that we are connected to nature, I find that's a really good way to sort of get out of your own head. I'd say a huge part for me is being more aware of how I'm using my phone. So I really try not to have my phone just before I go to bed so I don't have lights going in my eyes. And to be honest, I always find I sleep better, which always improves my mood. And I always make sure that I don't look at my phone for the first half an hour when I wake up. So I just have a bit of time to sort of get into the real world and not start worrying.
Mentally yours.
Paul, I'm so glad you've come to join me on the podcast. You've written a book and an absolutely brilliant article for Metro, which people can go and read on the site right now, and I very much encourage them to. It's all about your experience when your son made quite a dramatic and a bit of a scary entrance into the world. And when I read it, I honestly think it's the first time I've heard a guy talk about their experience of birth trauma before. So I salute you. It was just a brilliant piece, and that's why I wanted to talk to you more about it. But before we get into all of that, I want to go right back to the very beginning. How did you feel when you first found out you were going to be a father?
I felt amazing. But for some context, it was in previous relationships, I've got to that stage before, and it was either too young or she wasn't ready. So there was disappointment attached to that moment. So the initial feeling was, oh my God, like amazing, scary. It wasn't planned. So that was the initial moment when obviously she said, yes, she wants to keep it, you know, a woman's choice as well, of course. I was happy. I was absolutely ecstatic.
Yeah, it's a mix of emotions, but mostly very happy. Something you've spoken about in your piece and the book is really wanting to be a good father, and not just a good father, but a great father. And you touched on your own dad being absent in some of your childhood and the reasons for you wanting to be such a great dad. I also got the impression, reading your words, that you were maybe putting quite a lot of pressure on yourself. Would you say that that's fair?
More than fair. What ends up happening is you end up revisiting my childhood through this process, which is why I wrote the book, and all the things I didn't get to experience with my dad. So they automatically form a list of what my son's going to have. And so, yeah, definitely pressure. I put way too much pressure on myself to be a good father. But that's because I'm so scared that of my son experiencing what I had to go through. Which, don't get me wrong, it wasn't major things, but it's just those seminal moments where your friends' dads are at the football supporting their sons and you don't have anyone there. Or just, you know, if I fall, there's no one to catch me. Yes, my mum's there, but I'm talking about more from a father figure sense, someone that I can model off and role model off. It just wasn't there. Or waiting at the window when he said he would come to take me somewhere and just not show up. And my mum's saying, Paul, I don't think your dad's coming. It's okay, don't worry, son. And then I start lashing out at mum. So for me, is I don't overpromise my son things, even now. He's 3 and a half now. So if I've got something planned, I won't tell him until the last minute. Because I don't want to tell him, he gets excited, and I have to let him down. So it definitely forms my day-to-day parenting.
Made you very, very cautious, it seems. But no, it's lovely that you've got all that stuff in mind. As you mentioned, your little boy is 3 now, 3 and a half, did you say? So I know that Lauren's pregnancy was relatively smooth sailing at the beginning until it suddenly wasn't. Can you talk me through what happened and when you both started to realize that something might not be quite right health-wise?
So again, perfect pregnancy, no morning sickness. It was brilliant. So we planned sort of like a last holiday before Hunter was due. It was due Valentine's Day, actually, February. So we thought, okay, it's December, you know, go to like a place with Christmas markets, have like a baby moon, it's called. We chose Amsterdam. We got checked out before we went. Doctor said, yep, absolutely fine, go. So we took a train because we didn't want to risk flying because of blood pressure issues. After about the second day there, she was getting puffy, like her face was puffy, her legs were puffy. I was taking the mickey, puff mummy and stuff like that because I just thought, oh, it was nothing. But then, but then later that evening, we came home from a restaurant. And yeah, she started feeling a pain in her upper right rib and running baths at 2 a.m. just in pain. So we called 111. They said, look, it's probably just symptoms of pregnancy. She shouldn't be too bad. You know, it'll be fine. I woke up again at 4 a.m. and she's like pacing around the room. I was like, no, something's wrong. So we got the nearest or the soonest train back to London, dropped off at the hospital. And then the doctor said, you're not going anywhere. You're staying. We think you have preeclampsia. They ran tests. Her blood pressure was sky high. Her platelets low. They said, yeah, you're seriously ill. And later, the serious doctors then came in, the three of them coming to the room. And I'm like, okay, it's getting real now. And they say, yeah, we've got HELLP syndrome, which is a severe complication of preeclampsia. And it's highly likely you'll be given birth within the next 2 days.
Wow. For any listeners who don't know, can you just quickly tell us what preeclampsia is in a nutshell?
Sure. It's deemed a silent killer. It's a hypertensive disorder that affects women, some pregnant women, around the 20-week mark or soon after baby's delivered. It's caused by a defect in the placenta, which joins the mother and baby. Now, HELLP syndrome is a complication of preeclampsia, and really the only solution to solve it is to give birth. So you can imagine if you get detected HELLP syndrome early in the pregnancy, week 20 or before, the chance of baby making it is severely affected, and mum. It's severe. I mean, women die all the time, not all the time, but around the world, you know, a significant portion of women die a year from this, and babies. So yeah, it's a big thing, and no one really talks about it.
How did it feel for you getting that diagnosis? What, can you talk me through what was going through your mind when you heard that for the first time?
I was petrified, absolutely petrified. But I felt like I couldn't show how scared I was. So the dynamic is I've got Lauren, I've got her mum, my mum, a lot of females in the immediate family. And, you know, in the most traditional sense, I'm the man of the house. You know, I've got to appear, I felt I have to appear strong. Don't worry, guys, it will be fine. Be that positive person in the room, which I think is needed regardless. But inside, I just want to cry. I want to talk to somebody. Also, I don't want to tell close friends because what if the worst happens and, you know, mum doesn't make or they doesn't make it? That's just too much for me to comprehend. So I internalize it all, whilst on the outside appear, it's fine, no worries, don't worry, everyone, it's going to be fine, I know it is. And yeah, inside, I just wanted to cry.
Yeah, yeah. Where do you think that need to be the strong male patriarch of the family comes from? Like, why do so many guys carry that pressure around with them?
Yeah, for me, it's from childhood. It's, you know, you've got to be a strong man, look after family, be the man of the house, provide. I know in this age we're in now, you know, that's sort of changing, you know, but still the underlying feeling amongst men is, you know, we do have an innate, almost tribal need to protect and nurture and look after our family. This is something I've got. I'm proud of it. I want to. I feel more like, yes, you know, I pay the mortgage, you know, I provide a safe environment for my family to thrive. But it has to be balanced. And I think the balance is then we still can feel like we can open up and show our emotions and things, which we don't do as men, which we need to be better at doing. And especially since the book's come out, so many men have come up to me and then just start offloading because they feel more comfortable too, because I've shown vulnerability. So as soon as I show vulnerability or men show vulnerability, it makes the other man feel comfortable in giving their sort of feelings and their sort of background. And
yeah, absolutely. That's amazing that people have been in touch. What kind of things have you been hearing from men? Has it been all about fatherhood or a mixed bag?
Mixed bag. So this book covers so much, but it's a mirrored journey of they didn't feel included in the process. And I've been there. I mean, I'm about the first few appointments. It's, you know, and rightfully, look, the woman's going through it. It's her body. She's delivering. Of course, she's the most important person out of, you know, the partners. But at the same time, men are important. We're important for the family structure, the dynamic, and making the partner feel safe and comfortable and have no other worries and things. So at the same time, we still need to be looked at in our eyes and consulted. And I feel like, you know, some pregnancies aren't planned. Couples aren't necessarily together. They're trying to make it work. And I feel it doesn't help if the man goes along that journey and gets a tone of feeling like they're not needed anyway. It's just too easy for them to go, well, look, I'm not even needed. They don't even talk to me. I'm going for the exit door.
Yeah, absolutely. So your son was born via emergency C-section. I know he was premature and spent some time in intensive care, but thankfully was okay in the end. But that trauma, like, it doesn't go away overnight. And you've written about how you carried that with you for a while and you noticed it showing up in your life in different ways. Can you tell me a bit about how it impacted you or how you started to notice it in kind of the days and weeks and months after his birth?
I've been watching programs on TV, I don't know, like a film, and just start crying for no reason. And it wasn't even the emotional part of the film, just start crying. Or if anyone showed me a bit of kindness, something that to them would be just nothing. Oh, Paul, how are you feeling, Paul? That would just trigger me. Because it's almost as if somebody sees me, someone notices, someone's going beyond and actually caring, how are you, Paul? Because I think you can go along the journey feeling like, hello, like, does anyone care about me? You know, I'm spinning all these plates, like real life plates. Buying a house, selling the house, that's got issues. Promotion at work, making sure that officer's doing what it needs to do, pregnancy, all the things that one of those things can cause stresses on a person, five or six at the same time. And then this part is probably a bit toxic, and it's probably the way I'm built is I then see it as a challenge. I'm like, okay, let's see how much I can deal with and make it look easy. That's how I processed it all. But that comes at a cost. And that cost was me putting on loads of weight, not looking after myself, getting real snappy with people, especially my mum, my sister, very snappy, Lauren as well. And it was when my mum, my sister said to me, like, Paul, what's going on? Like, this isn't you. Barely smile anymore. And I remember seeing a photo of me at Christmas, after 1 year after Hunter was born. And I was just sitting there as a picture, and there's nothing behind my eyes. I'm just almost like going through the motions. I'm just mentally, physically just drained and tired. And at that point, I still didn't want to talk to anyone. I still didn't want to talk to anyone, but I felt like I needed to channel my emotions. So I thought, let me just put pen to paper. I started going on my notes on my phone, just jotting down feelings. And then it just evolved into, no, I've got a story to tell.
So is that really the way you've started to rebuild yourself and look after your mental health? For you, writing about it was the answer?
It was. It was almost as if I was lying down on the therapy couch, but also asking myself the questions. So I was like two people asking me the question, and it forced me to delve deeper. At first, my writing was just superficial about what happened, then got very deep, you know, trauma. Well, you know, what else affects my life? Or why do I have this shield that I need to give to the world? What other traumatic moments now in my life happened that formed the way I am today? I'm thankful for it. Plenty of times crying at the laptop as I'm typing away. But actually now I feel like I'm in a much better place to be able to talk about it and not get as emotional. I still get triggered. But I feel like I've dealt with a lot of the rocks that we all carry around in our invisible bag. Because we all do. It could be heartbreak, love, work, stress, depression, whatever it might be. We carry it around in this invisible bag. And if there's too much in there that doesn't get dealt with, it becomes very heavy. Men have the highest suicide rates. It's all linked. We just don't talk enough about it. We don't offload some of these rocks.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. You also speak about race in your book and how being a Black man maybe adds a whole other layer to this. Do you think race maybe influenced your recovery from this big trauma or your perception of accessing help, anything like that?
I think definitely in the Black community, there's there's like these cultural tropes of, you know, man up, don't ask big people questions, just handle it. I think those kind of things do perpetuate silence and make me feel like you're not confident to be able to speak about these things. Race, it's a tricky one because I definitely saw areas, best lazy and sloppy, but, you know, definitely microaggressions. So for context, a few things happened. And again, I could be wrong in how operationally it works, but I remember on the incubator where my son was, and it's in the special care unit, it had Lauren's last name there rather than mine, which I get, you know, it's identifying mommy with baby. But again, that's like a chip on the shoulder. That just feels like, well, hello, I'm dad, I'm here, I'm present. There is definitely a stigma of absent Black fathers. And my thing is, ever since Lauren got to the hospital, I was sleeping on that blue chair beside her bed. I wouldn't leave the hospital. I was there, I was present. I was there before work, after work, going back and forth. I was present. And I wanted to be clear that I was present. So there was that instance that sort of, you know, annoyed me. But then the Red Book, which is the book where it has all the baby's information, ethnicity, weight, it's important. You carry it around with you for years, jabs, that kind of thing. For ethnicity, one of the nurses put white on there. And that one, I couldn't let slide. I was like, why? Surely, one, you ask the parents, but two, I'm here.
But you thought, are you sure?
I couldn't believe it. I said, Lauren, have you seen this? And she said, what? I said, look, ethnicity, they put white there. Did you? No. And I was like, well, who did it? I end up, there's an inquest. I was like, this is even, because I'm in a mixed relationship, even both Black parents who have a premature baby by almost 3 months, the baby will come out fair. So it's just a sloppy, lazy thing for them to have done. They apologize profusely, but again, that's just an example. And ultimately, I made sure I knew all the nurses. I basically lived there for the best part of 6 weeks. So I just found that a hard pill to swallow, that one. And again, could I be angry? So I'm getting angry and I'm feeling like, oh, here you go, Paul, you're fitting the Black angry man narrative. Angry Black man. So it's just, yeah.
No, it's understandable that you would feel that way. Why do you think it's so important for men to talk about this stuff more, particularly if their partners had a tricky pregnancy, a tricky birth? Why do you want to get dads talking about it?
Because when we need it, we need it for our own mental health. And also, I think, to provide understanding for women as well. Because we don't speak enough about it, you're not going to know some of our woes or things that we go through that process. And hopefully prevent men doing things they shouldn't do, like prevent them doing silly things like committing suicide and stuff, because they feel like they can't go nowhere, they can't speak. Also, there is still a notion that, you know, men talk about their emotions, they're weak and they're feeble and they're soft. Especially when you even look at now with what's going on with Andrew Tate and everything around that, which is the opposite of, you know, man up, and also what women are deemed to be attractive. Women don't want to see men crying and stuff. Again, it just perpetuates vicious cycle where men won't feel like they're able to talk about things. And that has to change. That's the biggest strength for me. A man being able to be open and express himself is a strength, not a weakness.
Yeah, definitely. It's beneficial for men and women. I do not understand the people who say otherwise. Don't listen to them. If you're listening to those people, they're the wrong people. They are the wrong people. how would you say your mental health is now? You've been on this kind of amazing journey. It's a bit of a cliche phrase, but you have. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling great. I didn't realize that even my own mental impact was actually suffering. I didn't realize until after the fact. And I was like, oh no, I was definitely elements of depressed. And also, a baby, bringing a baby in dynamic in a relationship, it affects the relationship you have with your partner as well. Like, there's a massive strain on that. Understanding both sets of roles now, the whole thing shifts. A woman shifts massively, you know. I'm not taught for Lauren, but I know that women lose their identity. They're more than just a mum. They had their careers before, they had who they are. And I think that gets lost, but also there's an understanding that needs to be formed where a man has to go off to work. He's not going on holiday. Like, he's not going to some resort where he, you know, is choosing to go so he can't be at home. We would love to be at home. So something needs to be looked at with, you know, paternal leave and sorting that out, because I would love nothing more than to be at home and take months on end, you know, looking after my baby. And that's why lockdown was a blessing. For the majority, it was hell, and I get it. But lockdown for me was freedom. And I remember putting in the book, how can I be locked down to the confines of my house, but yet feel so free? And I did. It gave me a chance to bond with my boys, skin to skin. I loved lockdown. But it got ripped away from me within 2 months because I had to be back at work because the property industry was the first to reopen. And again, had to leave. So it's, yeah, I had to untangle and deal with all that as well. And then almost feel like an imposter because all the things I said I wanted to do for my son, I feel like I can't do because I have to get back to the rat race of work.
Is that constant balance between your work identity and your home identity that I think is just so hard for parents to juggle? You've given us so much to think about. Thank you. The final question I've got for you is one we give to all of our podcast guests. And that's, what's the most important lesson you've learned about mental health that you want to share with our listeners?
There's people out there that are willing to listen and help. The first step to me is just talking. Like, just talk to anyone, somebody. You'd be surprised. There's people out there that want to listen, and you're not in it on your own. You're not. As human beings, we like to, I think we've got more in common than we do different. I think sometimes we feel like we, you know, it's, you know, completely different from another, but not. We have the same, in essence, values and wants and needs to be loved, supported, praised, recognition. We all value those things. We all want to be listened to. We all want to have a voice. So I think first step is talk to somebody, be a friend, a work colleague. You'll find a problem half.
Problem shared is problem half. But I like your way too.
It's mentally yours.
Thank you so much to Paul for being our guest on Mentally Yours. Again, his book, Help, I'm Going to Be a Dad, is out now. If you've been affected by anything you've heard today, please call the Samaritans on 116 123. You can find us on our Facebook group, Mentally Yours, and on Twitter at Mentally YRS. and get involved. Tell us what you've been doing this week to look after your mental health. Message at Pineapple Audio Production on Instagram with your voice note. And thank you all for tuning in. Don't forget to follow and review for more podcast episodes coming your way soon. Mentally Yours is produced by Pineapple Audio Production. Bye for now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.